This talk was given at Insight Meditation South Bay. For more information and a schedule of our events, visit the Insight Meditation South Bay website at www.imsb.org. For information about online programs, visit the Bodhi Courses website at www.bodhicourses.org. Bodhi is spelled B-O-D-H-I.
So, dear friends, this is the 30th of June in the year 2016. It is now 8:07 in the evening, and we're here to talk about working with emotions and mental states. Now, I'm going to tell you that I'm not academically inclined with respect to practice, and so I had to look up what are mental states, even though I'm a therapist and I deal with mental states all the time. But in Buddhism, how did different people think about mental states? And it became quite complicated. It was very interesting. But very simply, what is an emotion? What is a mental state? What is mindfulness? So this is mindfulness of emotions and mental states. So for just giving you a brief definition of what is an emotion, I went back to a wonderful book called Healing Emotions. That's a conversation, a transcript of a conversation between the Dalai Lama and Paul Ekman. Paul Ekman is an emeritus professor from UCSF who is the world's expert on emotion, who defined the main emotions that all humans universally have. Mammals, animals have these emotions. He was the main consultant for the wonderful film, animation film last year called Inside Out, all about emotions. Wonderful film. In that book, what they say is that emotions are constituted of three things. One is a bodily experience, one is a cognitive experience, and one is some manifestation or expression. Now, that is a very debatable definition, and they started debating it. But it does kind of encompass what an emotion is. Now, I would like to, and then a mental state, before I go into emotion, a mental state sometimes is used synonymously with the word emotion. Sometimes not. And part of what they talked about was that in Tibetan Buddhism and in the Far East, feelings, or what we call emotions, are considered in the most fundamental form just pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And this is a very, very useful way of thinking about emotion. Pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Because our reactive selves are generally trying to get away from unpleasant and go toward pleasant. And resistance and clinging are the cause of most human suffering. And refining things down to just the fundamental pleasant, unpleasant, neutral in yourself is a great ground for practice with emotions, actually. So mental states include intention, include aversion, include clinging. And we don't actually call those emotions in the West, but in the East, those are considered emotions, too. So working with emotions and mental states involves just working with all of our reactivities, positive, negative, neutral reactivities. I don't know if you're familiar with the idea of causes and conditions, that we humans are the product of all the causes and conditions of our lives, our genetic inheritance, all the things that have happened to us, all the ways we've reacted to those things. I like to think of this because I work in high tech a lot, and I like computer science, and so I think of it as the hardware we inherit that's got some software already built in, the software that gets, you know, sort of put in to ourselves through all our experiences. And with mindfulness, we're actually installing the software of mindfulness to play along with other things. So in a way, our human reactivity can be thought of as just running our program. And there are lots of bugs. And so, mindfulness gives us a way of fixing the bugs, kind of running our usual programs, but with mindfulness along with them starts to help them transform. There's a concept or a phrase Thich Nhat Hanh uses that I really find helpful, which is habit nature or habit energy. Have any of you heard of that phrase? So in order to illustrate that phrase, he tells a story, and I'll tell you that story. Imagine that there is a horse all saddled up and ready to go. Imagine you like riding horses. You've got your foot in the stirrup, your hand on the horn of the saddle. You're throwing your leg over to take your seat. Something startles the horse, and the horse starts racing. And someone yells to you, "Where are you going?" And you say, "Ask the horse," because the horse is carrying you. So the horse is our reactivity that comes from our causes and conditions. We can think of that reactivity, whether positive or negative, as habit nature, habit energy. It's usually used, that phrase is usually used to talk about or refer to negative habit energies that we have to transform, but it's also true of positive ones. Falling in love is one of my favorite ones. I like to teach that emotions happen in our bodies, and when emotions arise, they distort our thoughts. The stronger the emotion, the more distortion. And usually we think again of that in negative terms, but falling in love is a very positive mental distortion that comes from an emotion, that comes from a bodily sensation, lots of bodily sensations and invisible bodily sensations. And, you know, we think someone is perfect until we find out they're not. And, with the negative emotions, all the negative emotions distort our thinking. So nothing is as true as we think, especially when we're having a feeling about it. And the problem with being human is that when an emotion is attached to a thought, we're more likely to believe the thought. So when a thought occurs in the presence of an emotion, it's less likely to be true, and we're more likely to believe it. So in mindfulness, what we're training is to get to know our thinking, to get to know our emotions, to settle ourselves down in the presence of emotion so that we can soothe and settle and then see our minds, observe our emotions with more objectivity, and then we can manage them better. Okay. So habit nature, one of the reasons I like that phrase is it's sort of neutral. As a therapist, it's a wonderful phrase to use because all of our reactivities are our habit nature. We did not choose one morning to get up and be who we are. And those people that are annoying us also didn't get up that morning and choose to be that way. And we may be annoying them as much as they're annoying us. And we are all playing out our habit natures. And so learning to see everybody this way, one of my favorite phrases comes from Pema Chodron, that everybody is just trying to get comfortable. And that is a very helpful, deep compassion practice to see if someone is giving us difficulty or we are giving ourselves difficulty. We're reacting in some way. We're generally reacting to get away from something. And that reaction, whatever we do to get away from the negative thing might also be negative, but we're shifting our state. So we have these automatic pilot reactivities that just try to get away from negative and go toward positive. So we're coming off automatic pilot and mindfulness by learning to stop, calm ourselves, and observe so that we're learning to respond and not react. And this is the heart of working with emotions with mindfulness. Are you all familiar with the definition of mindfulness or what mindfulness is? Not all meditators are. Some people are. Well, I like to use Jon Kabat-Zinn's definition. It's a kind of operational definition, and it is mindfulness is paying attention on purpose in a particular way, in the present moment, with non-judging awareness, and with openness, kindness, and curiosity. The non-judging awareness is a very tricky part of the definition because it sounds like we're not supposed to judge. But if we try not to judge, of course, what happens? We judge our judging. So awareness of judging is a very, very important practice. And when we become aware of our judging and become more stable in our awareness of whatever it is we're judging, that leads to not believing everything we think quite as 100% and forever. So we actually become a little less judging, not by trying not to judge, but by observing our judging. So if someone or yourself is experiencing difficulty, you're having difficulty with someone or yourself or something in life, all of the reactivity is just habit nature. I'm going to do a little experiment with you. This comes from Dan Siegel, actually, who's a neuropsychiatrist at UCLA. I'm going to say one word 7 times, and I'd like you to just maybe close your eyes so you're not looking at my face as I'm saying it, and notice what happens in your body, your emotions, and your mind when I say this word. No. 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 So just checking in and noticing, and I'm going to ask you, just popcorn style, what did you just experience? What happened when you heard that? Yeah.
I get a slight tightening in the gut.
Tightening in the gut? How many people got something like that? Just point to where the tightening happened in you. Yeah, see, everybody tightens in a different place. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we tighten when we hear no. Unpleasant makes us tighten. Cell phone practice. We just use the cell phone as a bell of practice, breathing in and breathing out. I actually like having the cell phones ring. Okay. What emotion arose in any of you hearing that word seven times? Fear, okay.
Caution.
Caution, uh-huh.
Anger.
Anger, aversion.
Irritation.
Irritation.
Anticipation of something.
Anticipation of something, uh-huh, okay.
Well, it changed. Initially it was, you felt very small, and then it progressively went to anger and whoosh.
Yeah, okay. And now there is no content. There was no cognition, actually, that went with that. Although all of us have cognition, associational thinking, you may have had videos or stories playing in your mind, memories from the past, who knows what. But there was no particular cognition that went with this. So this is just kind of a pure emotional reaction, as pure as it gets, I think. We're just reacting, and we're reacting automatically, and it's negative. And that can lead to thinking. Would anybody be willing to say what their thinking went to? So complex thinking actually arose from just hearing that word. Anybody else? Yeah.
It was the sense of, oh, here we go again. I've felt that before.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
The memory. Oh. You
know, yeah, the familiarity of hearing no.
Turn that off. Here it is.
We've been hearing it with awareness since we were two. Saying it too. Who else?
Come from, and it was like being corrected as a child kind of thing.
Uh-huh. Some memory. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anybody else?
Fighting back.
Uh-huh, yeah. An automatic thing. Okay. All right, so now let's do the second part of the experiment. You can probably guess what it is. So just closing your eyes. Yes. Yes. So just noticing, how do you respond when you hear this word seven times? That was second time. Yes. 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 Okay. What happened?
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah, for me, I felt joy, but I noticed that it was exact in terms before, but with no, the contraction was down like this. With yes, it was exact opposite, it was up like this, mm-hmm. And expansive. And
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So with no content that goes with this, actually, I'm noticing you guys are feeling your bodies. Uh-huh. Memories. Uh-huh. Anybody else?
I felt a progressive sense of relief / release.
Uh-huh.
As the yes repeated, it began to feel like a personal affirmation in some way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I just felt more expansive with each yes.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes. I think it is amazing, actually. I like this little exercise, actually. So pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. It's pretty much that. It's pleasant to hear yes. It's unpleasant to hear no. Neutral might be if I just said the word and to you seven times. Maybe, I don't know. Anyway, so the very fundamental way of experiencing emotions. Okay, so we have positive emotions, neutral emotions, negative emotions, and then bringing in the more cognitive elements of it too. I'd like to do another little exercise with you just to explore emotion again, focusing first on positive emotions. And what I'm going to do is have you bring into your awareness something that's been pleasant in the last day or two. And I'm going to lead you in the taking in the good practice that Rick Hansen teaches. How many of you are familiar with that practice? So this practice is designed to help to counterbalance the negativity bias that is part of human nature. We have a negativity bias. One fun way of illustrating this, and the reason we have it is, and this is his example, imagine Joe Cool Dinosaur chilling out on a Sunday afternoon, taking in the rays, and not worrying about a thing. And then, whack, he gets killed. He was not worrying. He was not vigilant. He was not trying to, he was not paying attention and protecting himself. He didn't survive. Another one, Ig and Og, two cavemen, are going around looking for food. They come up to a big bush, and there's a lot of rustling. Ig jumps in to get whatever's in there, and Og says, I'm not so sure. The worrier survives. So worry is an adaptive emotion. The negativity bias is an adaptive part of human nature, but the problem is it overruns itself, and it's not well trained. In mindfulness, we can train it so that it's useful but doesn't hurt us. So Rick Hansen talks a lot about this and ways to counterbalance that negativity bias. His book, Hardwiring Happiness, is all about this, actually. So taking in the good practice is a four-step practice of identifying something pleasant, turning it into an experience, and I'll guide you in how to do that so that you're re-experiencing it a little more than just remembering it. Breathing in as if you could take in the goodness of it, the pleasantness of it, even one molecule of pleasant, if pleasant has arisen, breathing in as if you could take that in, and as you breathe out, you imagine you're absorbing it. And if you're a person who likes imagery, you could imagine absorbing light or a color or a temperature or golden threads, or for children, putting it in the treasure chest in your heart. So it's breathing in, taking it in, breathing out, absorbing it. He has an acronym he developed for the book Hardwiring Happiness, which is HEAL, that goes with his practice, H-E-A-L, which is H for have an experience, E for enrich it, which means turn it into an experience, make it more vivid. A for absorb it, that's the breathing in, taking it in, and absorbing it. And the L part is optional, and I don't usually guide that for a first meeting with any group. It's linking that positive experience with something negative or difficult as a kind of a salve or a soothing of that difficult thing to kind of coexist with the difficulty. So that's the premise of Hardwiring Happiness. I'm going to lead you in the first three steps of taking in the good, a way of staying a little longer with a positive experience. We also say that the mind is Velcro for negative. That's the negativity bias. Teflon for positive. We love the positive, but we don't just ruminate on that the way we do on the negative. So the positive comes, and then we're off to another thing. So taking in the good is a way of staying with the positive a little longer and cultivating happiness. In Buddhism and in mindfulness, there are a lot of cultivating happiness practices, just to put it in context. The half-smile practice that Thich Nhat Hanh offers is a cultivating happiness practice, actually, as long as you're not forcing the smile. It's very interesting that cultivating a half-smile can actually bring a lot of benefits. You don't have to do that practice, but if you like it, it's quite interesting to do. Bringing appreciation or gratitude once a day. There are a lot of studies on how that leads to greater happiness. Thich Nhat Hanh has a what's not wrong practice that's a variant of appreciation practice that's one of my favorite practices. We call it appreciating the non-toothache. So we say, you know, when you have a toothache, you'll say, oh, I'm going to be so happy when this is gone, but when's the last time you were happy you didn't have a toothache? So there's always something available to us that's not wrong, and it's not forcing happiness or gratitude. It's just recognizing that we are more than whatever difficulty may be grabbing our attention right now. I worked with people with brain injuries for many years, and so it's very easy for me to access being great, truly grateful for what's not wrong about the fact that I can walk and use my brain and use both hands, and, you know, so like that. So, and as you know, the four Brahma Viharas, or immeasurable qualities, also called the four heavenly abodes, which are loving kindness, compassion, equanimity or inclusivity, and sympathetic joy, taking joy in other people's joy. These are the four practices within mindfulness for cultivating happiness. So there are many, many practices for cultivating happiness. Rick Hansen in The Taking in the Good has simplified it to a very secular thing. So now I'll guide you in that one. So if you bring into your awareness something pleasant that's happened in the last day or two, just something that you could remember in detail, and when you know what you're going to be working with, maybe placing one hand on your chest. Okay, and you can let your hands rest. So bringing this pleasant experience into your awareness, and to the extent that you can, remembering, where were you? Were you by yourself or with other people? Roughly when was it? Was your body sitting, lying down, kneeling, or standing? Moving or stationary? What was your body doing? And if you can remember, just whatever you can remember, what were you hearing? What were you seeing? Was there any smell or taste? Can you remember any skin sensations or inner body sensations? Can you remember what you were feeling at the time emotionally? Can you remember the thoughts you were having at the time? Or even just one thought? And then right now, as you're bringing this a little bit more vividly into your awareness, right now, what are you experiencing in your body? Could be on the surface of your body, inside your body, any sense of tension, ease, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, heavy or light, just whatever sensation you might be feeling in your body right now. Are you aware of any emotion right now? And are you aware of any thoughts right now as you're experiencing this pleasant experience again? Calling it up from your memory into your present awareness, re-experiencing it a little bit. And just noticing your mental, emotional, and physical experience. And if there's any pleasantness you're experiencing right now, breathing in as if you could take in that pleasantness or goodness. And as you breathe out, absorbing it into every cell of yourself, just inviting yourself to absorb it, however that makes sense to you. It could just be as simple as breathing out with the awareness of the pleasantness. Or you could use imagery if you like. So maybe another 5 or 6 breaths at your own speed, taking it in, breathing out, absorbing, without trying to have any particular experience. Just doing this practice of breathing in, taking it in, absorbing it on the out-breaths, and finding out what happens. And when you're ready, when you're finished with that, just observing, what did you just experience? And opening your eyes. Actually, since we're such a small group, I'm just going to ask you again, and maybe somebody who hasn't spoken yet would like to speak. You don't have to speak, of course. What happened with this exercise?
Kind of revitalizing, because it's like you relive the nice experience.
There's a nod and a smile.
I agree. I was feeling happy. I do have a strange reaction that I've been working on for many years. That is, when I feel happy, then if I pay attention to it too much, then I start feeling scared.
Mm-hmm.
And I did start feeling that.
You did. Okay, so this is an exercise, and this is very important in mindfulness practices, to always remain curious and not insist that a practice about taking in the good is going to feel good necessarily. And then how do you take care of your fear? We'll be working with that in a little while. But did anybody else experience anything like that, any difficult emotion?
Yeah, the positive and the doubt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I felt a mixture of happiness and poignancy.
Poignancy, sadness, uh-huh, uh-huh. Uh-huh. Actually, let me just offer you something. I will be going into this a little bit more. Mindful self-compassion is... there are many mindful self-compassion practices that I've trained in. They were created by Kristen Neff and Christopher Germer. And the main... core practice for mindful self-compassion is to find a gesture that feels good to you and comforting to you. For many people, it's one hand on the heart or two hands on the heart. So just try and see how it feels to put one hand on the heart, two hands on the heart. I like one hand on the heart, one hand on the belly. Kind of feels stabilizing to me. I have a client who likes one hand on the head and one hand on the heart. He's very intellectual. Some people do not like these gestures and prefer to just kind of give themselves a hug or touch their arms somewhere, or even just touch their hand. So with mindful self-compassion, we find the gesture that feels like we're warming ourselves up, being friendly to ourselves in the presence of difficulty. And then we begin with a mindful allowing awareness. I'm noticing I'm feeling fear. I'm noticing I'm feeling doubt. I'm noticing I'm feeling poignancy or whatever it might be, along with the happiness. This is hard. This is tough. This is a moment of suffering. And then see if you can find a sentence that might be kind that you could say to yourself, that you might say to someone else experiencing this or a child experiencing this. Not it's going to be okay, reassuring kind of thing, which is kind of a resistance, but something kind. Examples might be, what I like to say to myself is, I am here for me. I know that all things change, and though I can't believe it at the moment, I don't believe it at the moment when I don't feel good that it'll change, but I do know that it will change. So any sentence that you might think of that might feel kind to you, and remembering that other people feel something like this too, that suffering and difficulty is part of the human condition. And whatever we're feeling, other people have felt it and are probably feeling it now. This is not designed to diminish the experience at all, but to remember that we're not as alone as we often feel when we're experiencing a difficulty. So this is a three-part practice of mindful allowing with a gesture of kindness, a statement of kindness, and a reminder that other people feel this too, common humanity. And without any goal, but just finding out how does this affect you. And you might do some circles, just kind of free up your body, because the body freezes up when we're having emotions. The breathing gets more shallow and can stop, especially with fear. So letting that energy flow. Emotions can get stuck in us. So just letting the emotional energy flow as well as the physical energy. And you can work with your body to help the emotions flow. It's actually much easier, I find, to work with the body first when a difficult emotion is there than to work with the emotion itself or the mind. Going through the body doing the self-compassion practice, doing gentle stretching, doing walking. Thich Nhat Hanh always walks in meditation to cool the flames of anger. Moving our body is very helpful in the presence of strong or difficult emotion. Let me just ask you, did that affect you at all to do that? Yeah? Felt calming? Uh-huh. Reassuring? Uh-huh.
Yeah, I like that. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Release of tension, gratitude.
Gratitude in the sense that here's a tool.
Yeah. This is currently my favorite tool for working with difficult emotion. I've been teaching mindfulness for 15 years now to thousands of people, and the core mindfulness practice is to allow what you're experiencing, which is super hard to do, because it is our human nature to resist what we don't like, any difficulty, insist it should be different. That's what causes our suffering, but it is so reflexive, it is such part of our nature. Someone told me a very interesting story that I'd like to share along those lines, which is it was the eighth class of an 8-week mindfulness-based stress reduction program. And everybody was sharing what had happened to them in those 8 weeks. And one man said that he had severe anxiety and that he'd been going to Spirit Rock Meditation Center and IMC and courses and classes for 10 years. And it hadn't helped his anxiety. And he said he finally realized by reading John's book and taking the mindfulness-based stress reduction program, especially the part of John Kabat-Zinn's book that deals with how to deal with pain, which is don't run from the pain. Don't fight the pain. Get curious about the pain. Go into the pain instead of away from it, which is completely counterintuitive. And he said he tried that. He thought, why don't I try that with my anxiety? He went into his anxiety and got curious. And he had those skills of body scanning and breathing awareness and the stability of meditation to help support him in going into his anxiety. And he said it was life-changing. And for a few weeks, he had had a real shift in how he was experiencing his life doing that practice of going into the anxiety, which is another kind of pain. So this is mindfulness, right? It's an allowing awareness. For many years, I've taught people a way of stretching that I kind of guided you in earlier, where you hold a stretch and breathe through your body, releasing tension, that can help settle emotions. And if you do 3 to 5 minutes of gentle stretching like that, where you're moving your emotional body from your throat to your pelvis, with spinal twisting, with folding, compressing the emotional body, and then releasing it, compressing, releasing, basically massaging your emotional body, you can settle emotions so that then you can find out, okay, what's happening in my mind? What's happening in my emotions without getting so quickly lost, which is what happens with emotion. It reduces the distortion, and we can learn more about ourselves in the presence of strong emotion. But people were just not doing it in the presence of emotion. No matter how much they loved the stretching and would respond to it and said they loved it, and including me loving it and knowing how effective it was to help settle things so you could get more objective, in the presence of a strong emotion, you do not want to do it. You don't feel like changing your state. You feel like staying in your state. When you're angry or afraid, you get kind of frozen. And what I have found in the mindful self-compassion practice that we just did is people are doing it. If I show it to people once, they'll come back and tell me they've been doing it. I was shocked. So I started thinking, how come? And I think it may be, I mean, I don't know, but I think it may be that when we're feeling fear or anger or any difficult emotion, this is our gesture. We actually close in, and that's the self-compassion movement. And so if you do this, you put your hand on your chest, you hold yourself somehow, you warm yourself up, you say, hello, my suffering, hello, my pain, hello, my sadness, my grief, my fear. Here you are. I know you're here. I don't want you, but here you are. This is hard. I'm going to do the best I can. I know you're suffering my anxiety. I know you're suffering my fear. I'm going to do the best I can for you. Other people feel this too, and I'm going to be with you. We're going to take care of you. This is an allowing awareness paired with a compassion practice. And that pairing transforms it so much more quickly than just the allowing. This is what I'm finding, actually. The mindfulness alone, which is the allowing, is very helpful, very transformative. But when you add the compassion, it's so warming. And this is thanks to Kristen F. and Christopher Germer. Kristen F. created the field of self-compassion. So there's so many practices for taking care of difficult emotions. I think there's still time for me to do this without leaving you in a difficult state. What I'd like to do is do the corollary exercise of having you bring up a difficult emotion, a difficult situation. Now, there's kind of a guideline for this. If you bring up something unpleasant, it's very important to pick something small, big enough so that you can sort of feel the unpleasantness of it, but not so big that you're going to get swamped with a strong emotion. So the idea is to pick something that you're averse to and familiar with being averse to, that you have an autopilot reaction to. You might wish you didn't have that reaction, but you do have that reaction. It's just something you don't like in your life. It could be a person that you have to deal with, and you wish you didn't have to, but there they are, so you're used to dealing with it, but you kind of react to things. No, just a routine thing, so that makes it safer to do the exercise because you're used to experiencing it. It might be that you're annoyed with something in someone or irritated. It could be something about yourself, a habit of your own you wish you could break and you just keep doing it. It could be a task you don't like to do. It could be as simple as taking out the garbage, answering certain emails, just something that you're averse to in your life that's around a 3 or a 4 of aversion on a scale of 10 in intensity. Definitely not higher than 3 or 4. Sometimes when people pick something they think is a 3 or 4 intensity, it shoots up during the exercise. So be careful. Just to pick something sort of small. And what we're going to do is bring the same thing we did with taking in the good, only we're going to be taking in the unpleasant right now. But we're not going to breathe with it and stay with it. We're going to do compassion and stretching at the end. So bringing into your awareness something unpleasant from the past day or so. And just go ahead and take your time choosing, and when you know what you're going to choose, place one hand on your chest. Okay, and releasing your hands. So bringing this difficult experience or unpleasant experience into your awareness, and we're going to make it real, make it vivid a little bit more, remembering where were you when you experienced this unpleasant experience? Roughly when was it? Don't have to be exact. Who were you with? Were you by yourself or with other people? What was your body doing? What position was your body in? Was it moving or not? What were you hearing, if you can remember? What were you seeing, smelling, or tasting? Can you remember what your body was feeling? The surface of your body, inside your body. Can you remember any sensations you were feeling? Can you remember any emotions you were experiencing at the time? And if you can't remember a specific emotion, just unpleasant, pleasant, neutral, comfortable, uncomfortable. Can you remember what you were thinking? And this time, paying attention to what you were thinking and coming into the present now, what are you feeling in your body in the presence of this memory? This unpleasant experience? Is there any tightness anywhere, any tension, any pressure, any heaviness or lightness, any other sensations? What's your body experiencing right now in the presence of unpleasant? What emotions are present right now? And again, what thoughts are there? Are there stories playing out? Are you in the past? Are you in the future? And if you could make a sentence out of your opinion, your judgment of this experience, what would that sentence be? Not trying to be a nice, mindful person. Just your automatic sentence of judgment. What would that be? Often, you know, if we don't like something, we have a judgment of it. So stating that judgment, like, this shouldn't be this way, or I don't like that, or that person is so-and-so, or whatever it might be, or I'm ashamed of myself. What sentence would you come up with? And then asking yourself, am I 100% sure that this sentence is true and forever will be true? Which is not to argue with yourself. This doesn't mean the sentence is wrong. It just means that we are never as 100% right as we think, because everything we experience is colored by so many layers of perceptions, so many influences in our lives. We're never perceiving anything all 100%. Nothing is as 100% true as we think, which doesn't mean we're wrong. Just asking, am I sure? Opening up awareness a little bit to kind of release that grip on knowing that opinion is right, to let in a little light and air and space for questioning and being curious about it, seeing if there's something to learn about this experience. And then moving your awareness into your body and drawing some circles just to start freeing up the body. Does it make sense to say that maybe the emotion's getting stuck a little bit anywhere? And then see if you can massage that a little bit, the internal knots that form when we have negative experiences, untying them, softening them up with some circles and breathing. Now, since I'm guiding you, you're doing the circles, etc. But I should actually, since I said this before, let's try this. Let's do the self-compassion. Whatever gesture you like. Okay, hello, my whatever the feeling is that goes with this experience, here you are. Naming the feeling, by the way, is called name it to tame it. When we have an emotion, our emotional brain is activated. When we say, stop, I'm noticing I'm feeling, our observing mind is upregulated and the emotion downregulates a little bit. So we've already started managing ourselves by simply naming what we're feeling. I'm noticing I'm feeling, hello, my whatever it is, my worry, my anxiety, my annoyance, my irritation, whatever you might be working with, my sadness, hello, here you are. I know you're here. This is hard. This is tough. Bringing some kindness to yourself in a sentence. Making any statement to yourself that would be kind. And remembering that other people feel this too. We're not as alone as we might feel. This difficulty is a part of us, but it is not all of us. And then go ahead and stretch, maybe putting one arm behind you, one arm across, and just letting that self-compassion gesture turn into a spinal twist, massaging the core of the body and breathing through the body. Coming back to neutral, drawing some circles to balance things out and going the other way. And as you hold your stretch, see if you can breathe through your body with each out-breath, inviting a different part of the body to release tension. Like you could breathe out from the upper half of the body and invite tension to soften in your neck and shoulders or your back or arms, your fingers. Just breathing out tension from your body while you hold the stretch. Coming back to neutral, drawing some circles. And if you can and you like to, lifting and folding and letting your torso come down toward or onto your thighs, letting your arms hang around the outside of the knees, letting the head hang, letting the neck soften, letting the shoulders soften. And breathing. Inviting the whole back to soften lengthwise. Crosswise, letting the shoulder blades come to rest. Inviting the sides to soften and come to rest, and the chest and abdomen, and the hips, legs, feet and toes. Going back to the head, the forehead, eyes, the neck and shoulders. And when you're ready, placing the hands above the knees on the thighs and coming back up carefully, unfolding the body. And then coming to rest. And maybe with your eyes closed or open with an unfocused gaze, just bringing awareness to what you just experienced. How are you doing right now? If somehow what you worked with really grabbed you and you're feeling more negative still after the stretching, you might want to do some more stretching or a little bit more self-compassion. Just take care of the difficulty. Taking care of it in your body, taking care of it with kindness. Noticing what your experience is.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.